Hey guys, and welcome to Mysteries and Histories with me, your host, Georgia Marie. This podcast audio is adapted from my YouTube channel. I wanted to make my content more accessible for those of you on the go, and we all love a podcast. So if I ever reference anything on screen or a photograph, please bear in mind this audio was originally made for video. It won't hinder your listening experience at all, but just to save any confusion. And if you do want to go and subscribe to my channel, I'm just Georgia Marie over on YouTube. And with that, let's get into it. Hey guys, I am back. It is my first proper episode back on this channel after my big break. And I felt like it was only right that I came back with a Doe video. I'm still working generally through how I feel about the morals, the ethics around true crime. But there is no doubt in my mind how I feel about sharing Doe cases. And that is very good. I want to share these stories. I want to be able to help the unidentified be reunited with their names. And the Jane Doe case I have for you today is a particularly baffling one because this isn't your standard story of a decomposed body being found in a hidden place. No, this story is centred around an embalmed head being found in the woods of Economy, Pennsylvania, which is a Pittsburgh suburb. This woman is known as Beaver County Jane Doe. The police here don't suspect that she was necessarily a homicide victim. Her body had clearly been through the due processes after death. So how has her head ended up here, about 30 foot off the road in a random Pittsburgh suburb? So our story today begins on December 12th, 2014, with a teenage boy calling 911 and calmly stating, "I found a human head." He's come across it in the woods about 31 feet off of Mason Road in Economy Borough in Pennsylvania. I do expect when the authorities turned up, they expected to find a decomposed skull. I doubt they're expecting to find a fully intact female head. They noted that her mouth was open and her eyes were closed. She was in really good condition. From an immediate analysis of the scene, it didn't seem like the head had been in this location for very long. There was no blood, there was no evidence, it wasn't a really messy scene. And she was too far off the road to have ended up in this position accidentally. It strangely seemed like somebody wanted her to be found. She wasn't hidden, she wasn't buried, she was just a human head lying in the woods, almost in a field even. It was just a baffling scene, and the head was soon sent to the autopsy technician to be analysed, and they soon realised that this was not the first time this head would have been seen at autopsy. Jane Doe appeared to have been professionally embalmed, which is a process that preserves the body and slows down decomposition by replacing bodily fluids with chemicals. It's usually used to make body more presentable for viewings for a funeral and can also help manage the effects of illness or injury. Essentially, embalming helps keep a body more presentable to the human eye. It's cosmetic. Embalming is a temporary procedure and it doesn't stop decomposition entirely, it just slows it down. The moment you die, we die, our body will begin to break down, and it sounds really brutal, but decomposition starts within just minutes of our deaths. It is the most natural thing in the entire world. Once oxygenated blood stops flowing around your body, your cells begin to die and they release enzymes which essentially break themselves down. Obviously, external factors will affect how quickly a body decomposes, so the temperature it's left in, whether it's in heat or not, whether it's exposed to nature, the soil it's buried in. But according to LiveScience.com, on average, your regular body buried in a typical coffin will usually begin to break down within the year, but it can take up to a decade to fully decompose, like taking it down to just a skeleton. A body buried without a coffin, so just without protection from the elements and soil and nature, will usually skeletonize within just 5 years. Whereas embalming stops the bacterial activity that breaks down the body, and therefore the body will remain intact a lot longer, although it does depend on how well the body was embalmed as to how long it takes to start to break down. So expertly done embalming with bodies buried in a metal casket can mean a body might last decades with barely decomposing. But that does seem to be more of an anomaly. Generally, embalming only needs to last long enough for the families to view the body without trauma. It's designed to slow down decomposition, not stop it. That's very important to bear in mind. And I did actually find it very hard to find a timeline for how long a regularly embalmed body can last before decomposing. And it seems like there are so many external factors here that it's hard to find an answer. The conditions at the time of the embalming, the temperature of the remains at the time of the embalming, the quality of the fluids, the expertise of the embalmer. I mean, even medications that we take in life before death can interfere with the embalming process. But on standard, you're looking at maybe a few years before the body begins to break down. Maybe. As a bit of a side note here, I actually found it really interesting in my research to find out that the USA embalms much more commonly than other countries, and I fell into a bit of a rabbit hole whilst doing this research to find out why, mostly because I just like information. And it seems like at the end of the day, it mostly just comes down to funeral culture. It is much more common in the USA because of the customs of open casket funerals, so loved ones can get a last glimpse at the deceased before burial. Some of my research did point towards the American Civil War being the reasoning behind this. Apparently, most families during the war wanted their deceased loved ones to come back after dying on the battlefield, but the bodies would be entirely decomposed by the time they'd made the journey across the country. The USA, very big country after all. So the bodies would be embalmed to make them last longer for the journeys back to their families, and apparently it's here that that custom began. Don't quote me on this, I just fell down a rabbit hole, but I found it super interesting. Here in the UK, embalming just isn't really as common, and the majority of our funerals are closed casket. I don't think I've ever been to a funeral with an open casket. I don't even know if I like the idea of it personally, but yeah, it's all very cultural. Of course, embalming does happen here on occasion. It's up to personal choice after all. But also cremation, I found out, is also much more popular here in the UK. According to statistics, as of 2022, 80% of all deceased people choose to be cremated in the UK, whereas numbers from 2020 in the USA report just 56%. I will say, 56% is still the majority, but it's a fascinating difference. Like, that's a big difference in percentage. Anyway, I just thought all that difference in death practices was really interesting, and I suppose it is still relevant to the case, but yeah, I thought that was fascinating. Another huge reason bodies get embalmed anywhere in the world is to keep cadavers fresh for scientific and medical training and research. And it seems like this was one of the first ports of calls for investigators. They contacted all the local medical schools to see if the head was from a cadaver, but none of them reported any missing heads. We will circle back around to this in a bit, the idea of cadavers and medical schools and bodies for research. But first, I want to talk a bit about what was found in the autopsy, because you wouldn't think there'd be loads due to this being just a head, but you would be wrong. The head told us a lot of information. As I mentioned earlier, the head was that of a woman with grey fluffy hair, estimated to be somewhere between the ages of 60 and 80. The head was in very good condition, it hadn't been mauled by animals or seemingly affected by the elements, leading investigators to believe that it hadn't been there for more than a week. But again, because it was embalmed, it was very hard to tell. Her skin was very smooth, the tissue was well preserved, the coroner said that she was in excellent condition, or at least excellent condition for a head that had been outside for so long. Investigators have always suspected that the head was purposefully hidden away from the road due to the lack of signs it had been moved to this location by animals. A team of 50 people and cadaver dogs were brought out to search the area for the rest of the body, and nothing was ever found. This was just a lone embalmed head, kind of in the woods, kind of partially in a field, away from the road, so it's not like it fell out of a car, it's not like it was thrown from a car. It was just like it was placed there by somebody to be found. But why? There seemed to be very little doubt that this was a professional embalming as well. Like, this was a very well done job. Eye caps had been put in place, which are basically these prosthetic shields used to preserve the shape of a deceased person's eyes, and importantly, keep the eyes closed for these viewings. Again, a lot of the time when people are embalmed, it is for public viewings, and it can be quite troubling for loved ones to see eyes caving in or receding. So an embalmer's job a lot of the time is just to keep bodies presentable for the loved ones. However, when the eye shields were removed by the technician in 2014, they found there were no eyes behind them. There were no eyes. Now, it is worth noting that an embalmer is 99.9% of the time not going to be the person who removes the eyes from a corpse if it needs to be done. That is often done by the technician at autopsy, and sometimes they'll be the ones to put eye shields in place. Eye shields are very, very normal, but what the technician in 2014 found behind the eyes was less so, because the woman's eyeballs had been removed and were simply replaced with small red rubber balls. And this is not a usual practice. And this is a point that has baffled any professional involved in this case ever since day one, because there is no reason why these red rubber balls would need to be in there. It is not the norm. This is a very well done, very professionally done embalming job, but then there are red rubber balls in the eye socket. Why? There are some reasons why eyes might be removed post-mortem. Perhaps the deceased was a tissue or an eye donor, or they had a disease of the eye that warranted the removal, but this would be so incredibly rare. I mean, even in cases of organ donation, usually only the cornea is taken. It's very, very rare for the whole eyeball to just be removed. But in those rare cases, the eye caps are just put on as normal and nobody is any the wiser. Under no circumstances are rubber balls put in the place of the eye. There is just no reason to do that. And I want to make it clear here that these weren't medical grade rubber balls used in the profession for other things. Like, no, these were children's toy rubber balls. They were found to have been manufactured in China. I think they had China printed on them. So investigators tried to trace them back to their origin and go from there, to no avail. So you've got this really weird dichotomy here of professional eye caps being used, but also the weird usage of the rubber balls for no reason whatsoever. If a professional wanted to fill the space behind the eyelids, if for whatever reason the eye shields weren't doing their jobs, they would most likely just use cotton wool to fill that space, which is cheap and very easily accessible. They wouldn't jam a toy, a children's toy, in there. It just wouldn't happen. On top of this, it was also found that the head had been dismembered professionally. Many pathologists have agreed that this was not the work of an amateur. This was a very neat, a very surgical dissection. Somebody took their time, they knew what they were doing. This was essentially a professional job, which just adds another baffling layer to this case. This is a woman who died for reasons still unknown, was professionally embalmed, suggesting that she went through all the normal death avenues, all the normal due processes, and then somehow her head ended up in a woods near Pittsburgh. Was she buried and dug up? Was her body donated to science or medicine and was just never disposed of properly? There are loads of due processes in cadavers to make sure the bodies are handled with respect. There is always, always a paper trail. You should always know where a body is and what became of it. But what if in this case there wasn't? What if this woman, for whatever reason, just slipped through the cracks and somebody tried to cover it up? And all of these possibilities make it so much harder to try and chase this woman's identity, because chances are that her family have assumed that she is either A, safely buried, or B, her body was treated with respect as a cadaver. They likely have no idea that they even need to be looking for her. This is somebody who probably died, and her family went through the processes, they did what they needed to do. Although it is said that her head remained in very good condition, out of respect, authorities have never released photos of the head itself. So instead, they have released multiple forensic sketches of her, as well as a very realistic clay rendering. And you can only assume that these are all pretty decent depictions of the woman, because like I said, her head was in incredible condition. Although it is worth noting perhaps that features can change pretty drastically after death, even with embalming. So, beginning to end, this entire case is pretty frustrating. It is entirely unique, and investigators have said they have never encountered anything like this before. And to top it all off, DNA isn't even of any use here because of the embalming. Initially, police wanted to try and use forensic genetic genealogy to identify her, but despite multiple efforts, they've never been able to extract any DNA. The embalming chemicals essentially just destroyed everything. They've tried 5 times at this point, I think, and there's just been no luck. They are hoping that as new tech comes out, they might be able to find something, but as it stands, there's just nothing. They did send a sample of her brain, tissue, and hair to the FBI, who did manage to run toxicology, and that was luckily successful. There were traces of methadone, lidocaine, atropine, and methacrolline in Jane Doe's system, which did give them a few clues here. It suggested that she suffered with chronic pain, some sort of cardiac problem maybe, and they also likely made an attempt to resuscitate her at the time of her death. which is all very good, helpful information, but it's not exactly identifiable information. These are quite common drugs. And this is where we come on to some theories in this case. The most common theory here seems to be that this head was part of the body trade, with investigators believing that the head may have been severed not by a medical professional, but instead by a so-called body broker, somebody who sells body parts from cadavers donated to science. It's very likely that this was not a case of grave robbery. I mean, if it was, no cases were ever reported that involved a missing head, and it is pretty obvious if a grave has been robbed due to all of the broken earth. Investigators did contact every cemetery and morgue within a certain distance of where she was found, and obviously we don't know that Jane Doe came from this area, but you would think this kind of thing would be reported anywhere in the country, like a body suddenly turning up without a head. You'd probably report that to somebody, and there's been no cases of that, or at least no cases that have been able to be linked to this one. So instead, it is pretty widely thought in this case that Jane Doe's head was used in the body parts industry. In the USA, body brokers are companies that acquire dead bodies, dissect them, and then sell the parts for profit to medical research. I don't think I need to point out the huge ethical complications of something like this, but it happens, and for the most part, it is legal. According to Reuters, the industry's business model hinges on access to a large supply of free bodies, which often come from the poor. In return for a body, brokers typically cremate a portion of the donor at no charge. By offering free cremation, some death care industry veterans say brokers appeal to low-income families at their most vulnerable. Many have drained their savings paying for a loved one's medical treatment and can't afford a traditional funeral. And that's where body brokers come in. They say, we will take your loved one for medical research, but we will cremate part of them so you can keep them with you. And it seems like a win-win, only it's not a win-win. They are targeting the most downtrodden in society. And believe it or not, there is a big market for dead bodies. In most states, anyone can legally purchase body parts, and there is no federal law that governs the sale of cadavers or body parts for use in research or education. There's very, very little oversight here. It's essentially a free-for-all where people can profit off the sale of human bodies, and the poorest of society are the ones who are most affected by this, families who don't have any other choice. Poor people don't always have the privilege to choose what happens to loved ones after they die. Funerals, burials, cremations are all so expensive. And in a 2017 article by Brian Groh and John Schiffman, Reuters were able to identify thousands of body parts that had been missing or desecrated since 2004. And all of this is what anatomy professor Michelle Vitali suspects is the case here. She stated that the cut beneath the skin on Jane Doe's neck was very smooth and very exact. There were two slits in the back of the neck where the cervical spine had been removed on purpose. Basically, for body brokers, it is much more profitable to separate the head and the spine for sale. They're both able to be sold to different buyers, and Jane Doe's head was perfectly separated from her spine. In an attempt to prove their theory about this, investigators did decide to go out and purchase another human head. They wanted to see, firstly, how easy it was to do that, and secondly, how the head was cut, if the spine was removed in the same way. But they did, thankfully, quickly abandon that plan. I honestly don't know if it's ethical to go out and buy another human head just to see if this case can get solved. I don't know. I do know there are so many pros to this kind of thing. Like, there must be so much research, so many advancements made in medicine and science that will be down to cadavers procured in this way. But it feels weird. It feels wrong. It feels morally questionable, and it is unregulated for the most part. However, whilst the authorities did ultimately decide against this, Reuters went ahead and did it. They found a broker in Tennessee with no ties to this case. They were able to purchase two human heads for $300 each, and then they got a medical researcher to compare how the heads were cut with Jane Doe's. And yeah, it does seem like they were cut in the same way, with the cervical spine being removed. Is this enough to state categorically that Jane Doe's head came from a broker somehow ending up here? Not really, but it is certainly interesting to know. There is no way of knowing for sure until Jane Doe has been identified and that paper trail can all be followed that this is what happened to her, but it seems likely at this point. In their attempts to identify Jane Doe, authorities have obviously unsuccessfully turned to her teeth. She was found with a full set of teeth, and dentists at the University of Buffalo School of Dental Medicine carefully analysed each and every one of them. And it seemed like she had had extensive dental work in her life. Every single tooth had had some sort of work done on it, and some of them had had work done multiple times. One tooth had had 7 fillings done on it. So in life, this was a woman who had access to dental care, which might seem like the bare minimum, but dental care isn't available to so many people because it costs money. But this wasn't by any means top level care. Like, she couldn't afford the level of care that she needed. She probably needed crowns, but instead, because she couldn't afford that, she just had filling after filling after filling, which wasn't great, but it kept her teeth in her mouth, I guess. Apparently this work was well done. It wasn't exactly a bodge job, but it wasn't the kind of work that she actually needed doing, and she likely knew that. So the assessment here was that this was a lower income woman who may have grown up in an area where the water wasn't fluoridated, because her teeth just generally were not in good condition. Analysing the fillings in 3 of the teeth, they also found that the material used was something that wasn't available to dentists before 2004. So finally, they had some sort of timeline here. She had to have been alive receiving dental work after 2004. Because with the head being embalmed, it was really hard to figure out any sort of timeline here. Like, she could have been dead there for decades. But no, finally they knew that 2004 was the cutoff. She was definitely alive in 2004, and the body was found, or the head was found, in 2014. So that gave them a 10-year timeline here. And there was also isotope analysis done here as well. According to a Daily Mail article from 2015, Beaver County District Attorney Anthony Baroche was working very hard in this case. He was hoping that isotope testing could provide the answer. And he hired a company called Isoforensics Incorporated to test for isotopes. In theory, isotope testing should tell you where somebody spent a lot of time in their life, so where they grew up, where they spent the last few years of their life. And this is thanks to isotopes in the food and water that we all consume. And this is a good thing in theory, but in practice, I've seen isotope testing be wrong way more than it's been right. But isotope testing here apparently revealed that Jane Doe moved several times in the months before her death, which Baroche suspected might mean that she was in the care of various family or friends due to some kind of illness that she had. She couldn't care for herself. She also apparently lived somewhere in the Allegheny Mountain region. I don't know if I pronounced that right, sorry. Which does include Western Pennsylvania, stretching as far north as Eastern New York, Eastern Ohio, Northern West Virginia, and Maryland. And this is the general area in which she was found, so it kind of makes sense that she would come from this area. But again, take isotope testing with a pinch of salt, always. And although she was from the general area, they do not think she was specifically from Beaver County. They don't think she was there in the months before her death. They think she came from elsewhere, but like elsewhere, but still local enough. The same general area, but not Pittsburgh, exactly. One of the biggest leads I've ever followed through on in this case refers to a woman who died in 1952 called Teresa DiCarlo. So in January 2015, the clay sculpture of Jane Doe was released to the public. As a result, the police got about 20 people calling in with leads, and they of course followed up on every single one of them. But the most interesting was a lead from the coroner of Fayette County, which is about 90 miles south of where Jane Doe was found. And the coroner told them about a break-in at the DiCarlo family crypt in Union Cemetery on August 4th, 1988. One of the caskets in this family crypt was pulled from the wall, and that belonged to Teresa DiCarlo. She had passed away in 1952, so 36 years earlier. And when police went to investigate this, they went into the crypt, they found that the glass liner had been smashed and Teresa's head was missing. This was not a professionally done job by any means. They found that a knife was likely used to remove Teresa's head, and they did search all of the local area, expecting that her head might have been discarded somewhere nearby, but it was never found. They also didn't find any other grave desecrations. It was literally just this. It seemed very targeted. However, the police at the time didn't believe this was a classic theft, because no jewellery was taken, nothing else was taken, it was just the head, and this led people to believe this was down to a satanic crime. According to the police at the time, this was 1988, there was an active satanic cult in the area, but I would again take this with a pinch of salt, because it was 1988, the satanic panic was at its peak, And basically everything that didn't have an obvious answer in this time was put down to Satanism. So many people in this time genuinely believed in satanic ritual abuse. Anything that couldn't really be explained was put down to this. And you will find so many cases from the 1980s, from the 1990s, where Satanism is a genuine theory in cases. And this case is clearly no exception. I do have an episode about the Satanic Panic. If you want to go and watch that, it is one of the most interesting videos I've ever made, in my personal opinion. It was just a wild, wild time. And in Teresa's case, that is what they believed had happened. Whether or not that was the case, I can't tell you, because her head was never found. But upon getting this lead, they very much followed through on it. They compared Jane Doe's head with Teresa's. And whilst there was definitely a resemblance between them, they were both old white women, that was kind of where it ended. Also, we do know at this point that Jane Doe had dental work done after 2004 and Teresa died in 1952, so very quickly it was very obvious that this was not the case, but they followed through on it anyway. There is an Unsolved Mysteries episode about this case, literally the newest season on Netflix, and in that episode they talk about a possible suspect in this case. And I do always take Unsolved Mysteries episodes with, again, a pinch of salt. I keep saying a pinch of salt in this episode. I do always take it with a pinch of salt, because they have got to dramatise to a certain point. They've got to have interesting things to talk about. And whilst I think they are a good source, I don't always take it and run. I haven't even really watched it. I watched parts of it for this episode, but I try not to watch them all because I don't want it to sort of affect how I tell a case. But anyway, they speak about a man called Jay Grabner. So as I mentioned earlier, the person to find Jane Doe's head was a teenage boy called Charles. And Charles used to be very close with a man called Jay Grabner. Jay was a little bit older. It was kind of like a mentor-mentee situation from what I can gather. And they had a massive, massive falling out, and they basically ended up hating each other. And then one day, Grabner finds out that his horse, Ginger, has been stabbed in the field and essentially doesn't end up making it, and Jay is convinced that Charles is the one who stabbed his horse, and he goes around telling anyone who will listen that he is going to get revenge on Charles. And then one day Charles is walking through the woods slash field, the same field where Ginger was found stabbed, and finds this human head. The theory being that Grabner placed this head here for Charles specifically to find, hoping that he might get framed for murder. Obviously, we know that is not what happened, but the police very quickly started interviewing Grabner. Charles is not spoken to in this Unsolved Mysteries episode, he's barely referenced. All of the police attention immediately went to Grabner, and they found out very quickly that Grabner had a very intricate knowledge of the body broking industry. He spoke about body broking conferences held at a local hotel, and he told the police how at these conferences they often throw out or discard the body parts into the trash cans at the back of the hotel. How did Jay know this? We don't really know, but he did. But it was very suspicious that he knew this, because not many people have an intricate knowledge of the body broking industry. And again, the obvious theory here is that Jay went to this body broking conference, went through the trash cans, found a head, and placed it in this field for Charles to find to frame him for murder. The police even put him through a polygraph test where they asked him the obvious questions like, did you place this head here? Did you find this head in a trash can around the back of the hotel, etc., etc.? He said no to everything, but it was found that he was lying with a 99.9% probability. Of course, we know not to really trust polygraph tests, they don't really mean anything, but he was found to be lying about every single question. So take from that what you will. Sadly, Jay Grabner ended up taking his own life in 2020, and the police had no further answers. And from there, that lead has kind of died. And even if Jay Grabner was the one to place this woman's head in this spot to frame his old friend Charles for murder, which obviously did not work, it still doesn't provide us with any more answers as to who Jane Doe was. It just tells us how awful the body broking industry is. They are just discarding of body parts in trash cans behind hotels where they are holding conferences. It doesn't provide an answer for us. All it might tell us is how the head came to be in that specific position, but it doesn't tell us who she is. And that is the main thing we want answers for at this point. We want her family to know what became of her. We want them to be able to properly bury her if they never got the chance to do so. A funeral was held in 2015. My notes have stopped rolling, so I'm trying to remember now, but I'm pretty sure a funeral was held in 2015 where her head was buried. And so if she is reunited with her family, and if they did end up donating her body to these body brokers because they couldn't afford to bury her, there's every chance they might actually be able to bury her head if we can find out who she is. But that is a massive, massive struggle because there is no DNA here and the family probably aren't looking for her. The family won't have a clue that something bad happened. So here's what we probably know about Jane Doe. We know that she was between 60 and 80 years old. We know that she likely spent a lot of her life in the northeastern area of the USA. We know that she likely died of cardiac problems and efforts were made to resuscitate her at the time of her death, suggesting that she was with people when she died. We know that she likely went through the due processes after death. She went through autopsy. Her hair was styled. She looked like somebody had made an effort to make her presentable. She probably was viewed after her death, again suggesting that she had loved ones. We also know that she was likely on the lower income end of the spectrum. She had lots of work done on her teeth, but could probably never afford to get the work that she actually needed done, which was probably crowns. Instead, she just got filling after filling after filling. She might have had teeth problems, jaw problems in life. And that is about all we know about Jane Doe. If you live in this area around Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh, economy, make sure you are sharing this information with the people in your life. This is a case that at this point is only going to get solved through word of mouth, through people seeing her photos, seeing the clay renderings, because as I've said multiple times, there is no DNA here. Thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of Mysteries and Histories. If you have a bit of time, I would love for you to go and leave a review wherever you're listening to this podcast and spread the word. It would be much appreciated. I'll see you next week.